saving money on all your electrical needs at Menards. From wire, tools, testers, and more, Southwire is the perfect choice for your next electrical project. They offer innovative products to help you get your project done right. Hurry in today and save big on all Southwire products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. Entering Kenmore. Doors will open on the left.
How's it going, everyone? Welcome to episode 31 of Entering Kenmore. I am David Azer alongside Zach Coe. Zach, been a little while. Definitely forgot what episode we were on.
31
for sure. But it's been an interesting week for the Red Sox. They dropped the series finale against the Marlins, which feels like a long time ago, but that was in pretty embarrassing fashion. Then the two-game series against the Orioles was also pretty embarrassing. But then you take three or four from the Yankees in a weekend series in the Bronx. So how are we feeling?
Yeah, it's weird. The tenor kind of changes every day. Like if we did the podcast on Wednesday, like we were originally planning on before someone no names fell asleep, me, before we could. But if we were recording Wednesday, we would have been pretty fired up and pissed off. And then all of a sudden you come in and you kick the Yankees' teeth in three different ways for three straight days. And then obviously we're recording off a Sunday night baseball loss. So it's weird. I feel obviously happy about taking three out of four from the Yankees. But like when you look in like a like macro perspective of the season, like I'm not really feeling great about the way they're playing right now.
Yeah, hard to blame you. There's still a lot of question marks around this team, and I think they've been largely the same throughout the season in terms of the rotation, where you didn't feel great heading into the trade deadline. It always felt like, yeah, we're an arm or two short there, and then their only real add was Dustin May, and Steven Matz, I'll admit, has been pretty good out of the bullpen, but you didn't really need another left-hander out of the bullpen, and Dustin May, man, tonight just felt like a scheduled loss. Like he's
the toughest watch ever. He is just such a tough watch. And he had been okay his last two against the Astros and Marlins or I forget who he Orioles. I think it was. Yeah. That first game against the Orioles. But it's just like he takes his sweet ass time to the plate, and like he'll look good for stretches, and then other stretches he'll really labor. He's a tough watch. And it just comes back to what you said. Like, that was their deadline addition in the bullpen. Like, how is that even possible that that's what they were like, all right, or in the rotation, whatever. I think I said bullpen. But, it's so frustrating. And we can rehash the Joe Ryan stuff until we're blue in the face, but it doesn't really matter because he's not here, and I don't think he was going to be here unless they were willing to get really stupid and put, like, one of Meyer or Campbell on the table. But for that to be the guy that they went out and got and were like, here he is. Reinforcements are coming. Dustin May is here. Like, right now, he's your fourth starter if you're in a playoff series. And it, like you said, it's a scheduled loss pretty much when he's on the mound.
Yeah, today just felt like more of a scheduled loss than it ever was before. You took the first three games in New York, and it just felt like the Yankees weren't going to get swept in their home ballpark, especially with Dustin May on the mound. Not to mention, I think you've seen Carlos Rodon now three times this year. So it's tough to beat a major league pitcher three times in the same season, obviously. And he was kind of a weenie tonight, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
like, he was arguing crazy strike calls.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck he was bitching about there. Like, just very clearly balls, and he wants to bark at the umpire. But I feel like he's kind of shoved it up your ass a couple times now this year.
I think they beat him the first two times they played him.
Yeah, but I think he was good for a long while in one of those starts. Like, I remember him striking out a bunch of guys early and then them getting to him late. I mean, obviously, you're, what, now 8-2 against the Yankees this year? So hard to really get angry about that, like getting diced up by a good pitcher tonight.
Right, and that's the silver lining here, is obviously you took 3 out of 4, and also you already clinched the season series against the Yankees, so that tiebreaker that could come into play as obviously the wild card race nears its end here. You're still a half game up on the Yankees in the wild card, and the Mariners have been on a little bit of a skid. I had the standings in front of me. They're a game back of the Red Sox, but then behind them, it's the Royals 3 back, the Rangers 4.5, the Guardians 5. And then past that, it's the Rays and the Angels of the world. So
I think they should be good.
That's the thing, is they should be good, but I'm not banking on a deep playoff run here. Like, it feels much more like a 2016, 2017, you know, first round exit type of year then.
Yeah. And even like, obviously, like you said, you clinched the season series against the Yankees. So you'll get home field if you wind up tied. But I mean, we've been over it a bunch. Like, they need to get home field in this wild card round to have any time. Well, I guess maybe not if they play the Yankees. I think I said that kind of offhand on an episode or two ago, like, oh, if you draw the Yankees in the wild card round, then you're in the division series. But like, that's actually where we're at with this ownership over the Yankees now. But aside from that, like I said, the fourth starter, it's something that I'm going to harp on from now until however the season ends. Like, the fact, I go back to something that Bradfo said on Baseball Isn't Boring a couple weeks ago, where he was talking to Mike Hazen after the Diamondbacks lost in the World Series, and he was like, I didn't do enough. And someone said to him, was like, what do you mean? Like, we're a wild card team that just went to the World Series. And he said, we had a bullpen game in the World Series. Like, how is that doing enough? It's not doing enough. And like, that's where you would be if you're the Red Sox going into a game four of a playoff series right now. Like, you'd actually have either Dustin May or a bullpen game. And that's just not in, like, you're not putting yourself in a good position there.
Yeah. Game four of the World Series starter as of right now is Brennan Bernardino. Yes. Where we're at. With so I'm all Fitz set.
Bulk.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's the other thing, is I know we're kind of jumping all over the place, but Walker Buehler got put in the bullpen and he still sucks. Yes, of course, because it's a day that ends with Y, and Walker Buehler loves giving up runs. By the way, Walker Buehler and Dustin May in the same game is some form of torture that I've never seen before. But
at least Buehler works fast when he sucks.
Yeah, but even still, geez, like, that was a tough watch of all tough watches. But we were sitting here waiting around. It's like, okay, Buehler got taken out of the rotation, so obviously they have that open spot. Could we finally see Kyle Harrison in a Red Sox uniform? No, of course not. We're going to go with Brennan Bernardino, who also pitched today, and now he's going to open, probably get an inning, and then turn it over to Richard Fitz, who I'm pretty high on Richard Fitz, but even still, I don't want him as the fifth starter at this point. Like, I just think you have guys with way more upside that are just waiting in Worcester right now. And
well, and like, what is the point with him? Like, oh, you're going to bring him up in a bullpen role, which is fine, but you're hoping his stuff ticks up in a bullpen role and he can pump like 97, 98 for an inning or two. And then you're immediately like, have they even used him out of the pen yet?
No.
So you're immediately just going to trot him out there in a bulk role. So like, what is the pull? Like, oh, okay. So he's going to have Bernardino come out there for an inning. And then by the sixth inning, instead of the fifth, Fitz is going to be out of gas. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I especially because they scratched Kyle Harrison. So, and Harrison had been on turn with Buehler. And I said on the last episode, I think it was, or maybe it was just us having a conversation, but Harrison, it kind of would have been weird timing for him because he had a couple good starts in a row and then kind of got roughed up in his last one down in Worcester. So for them to then be like, all right, now's the time. Like, I understand that it has more to do with Buehler being ineffective in the major league rotation than what he's doing in AAA. But I just don't get the, like, what is the use? Like, when are we going to see Kyle Harrison if it's not going to be when we take Walker Buehler out of the rotation?
Right. And now I question, like, I was driving home and I'm like, are we going to see him at all this year? Like,
right.
We're getting to the point where it just kind of makes more sense. If you're not going to call him up when you absolutely need him, then are you going to call him up at all this? Oh, Jesus. Are you going to call him up at all this season?
Yeah,
I don't know.
It doesn't feel like it. And like, and everyone kind of assumed that Peyton Tolley would be kind of ramped down with his promotion to Worcester, and that just hasn't happened yet. So do they maybe see Tolley as more of an option for this season, and then Harrison moving into next season? Like, you, do they think he needs more work in the lab, in the lab, if you want to call it that? But yeah, like, it could be one of those things, but I don't know. Like, it, because Tolley obviously has only made three starts in Worcester. Two of them have been really good. The first one was obviously not very good at all. So I don't know. And in the hype around Peyton Tolley is now really picking up. Like, I'm seeing a lot of prospect guys be like, is Peyton Tolley the third best pitching prospect in baseball? Like, I already saw somebody say that he's the best left-handed pitching prospect in the sport.
Oh, I'm all over that. That would be sweet. But the, so the other question is, are you just gonna have Bernardino as your fifth starter as an opener consistently now? Because I don't think you can do that either. So maybe,
well, no, but I mean, that could be a potential, that could be a potential avenue with Tolley too.
That's what I mean.
Like, they've been slowly ramping him down, but not to the point where it's like they're going to put him in the bullpen and see how it looks. I don't know. Like, again, like, if you're using, like, it, and at this point, I'm not even, like, looking for Tolley to be the fifth starter, like, or even Harrison. Like, I'm looking for someone to step up to be that fourth starter in the playoffs, because Dustin May just is not that.
No, and I would be pretty okay with Dustin May as your fifth starter. But the fact that he has to be your four because you refuse to make any other additions, it's just, it's not a great spot to be in. And also, you're still kind of fighting for your playoff life here.
Yeah.
Like, I know that the Royals are on a heater right now, and I imagine they'll fall back down to earth. But you still have them breathing down your necks a little bit. And obviously, Seattle's a good team, and they made pretty significant additions at the deadline. The Yankees really don't scare me. I don't know if that's a bad take, but it's just like,
I've seen them
dominate them all season.
Yeah, it's, and not even just all season. Like, for the last 20 years, the Red Sox have owned the Yankees. Like, since 04, pretty much, it's been a complete domination. Like, in any game that matters, since game three of the 2004 ALCS, the Red Sox have won. So, I'm not scared of the Yankees at all. I'm a little bit more scared of the Mariners just because, like, okay, so you go and say you go into a wild card series against the Mariners, and it's Logan Gilbert versus Garrett Crochet. That's a toss up game. Like, that, like, you have your two workhorses, probably two top five pitchers in the American League on the mound. How does that look? I mean, it's probably pretty close to a pick 'em on the books. And then I think every game after that, the Mariners have the advantage pitching wise.
I agree. And I will say, like, I want to give Bayo his flowers because he has absolutely breaking out this year and has emerged as that number two / number three starter. But I would also feel a lot more comfortable if he was a three.
I wonder whose breakout candidate Brian Bayo was.
No, yeah, names. Yeah, you cooked on that. You cooked on that for sure.
But yeah, no, definitely. And it's just, I think part of it goes back to something that we've been talking about on and off for the entire season. And it's just, this is an inexperienced team. Like, we just haven't seen them in the playoffs yet. So, like, yeah, I do have faith that Brian Bayo is a good pitcher, and I think he can be it too. But, like, I would feel so much more comfortable if there was a guy that has been there, done that in the playoffs. Like, we went through the roster a couple weeks ago. Like, this is, for most of these guys besides Bregman and Chapman, this is their first cup of coffee in the playoffs. Like, on the current Red Sox that have played playoff games with the Red Sox, the list is Garrett Crochet, and Jarren Duran was technically in the dugout for 2021. So, but he didn't play. I have a Jarren Duran rant, but I might hold it for a little bit.
That's fair. Yeah. He did himself no favors tonight, but I would say that I don't think you can really count this as a trade deadline acquisition, but the best acquisition of the season has been Nathaniel Lowe. Like, it's,
oh dude, he's electric. Easily. I'm very happy I switched to the right side of history on that one after the spray chart, because he's been an absolute electric factory.
Dude, the only thing Nathaniel Lowe has done during his time as a Boston Red Sox is hit nukes and look like an absolute cutie patootie while doing it. Like, he just absolutely loves being here. Like, this is what being on the Washington Nationals does to people. He was like, it was weird because in all of his Texas Rangers interviews, like during the postseason, he always seemed like a nice guy, like down to earth, like people seem to gravitate towards him. And then you find out he's like kind of a clubhouse cancer with the Nationals, which was a little weird. And people were like a little bit nervous about him moving over to the Red Sox and how maybe that would affect some of the clubhouse interactions here. But it seems like he's pretty well liked in that clubhouse. And it seems like he's taking to this team very quickly. And I've enjoyed it a lot. And it's only been a week. So,
yeah, I think some of it is he's got a little Travis Shaw in the box when he's standing in there, which I love. I loved Travis Shaw. But yeah, it was weird because I think have started to hear that maybe there was some stuff going on there with Lowe in the Nationals organization that they didn't necessarily mesh together, which, like, I don't know, the Nationals are what, the second or third worst team in baseball right now. Mm-hmm. So I would probably focus on winning baseball games before arguing with your like random journeyman first baseman. But yeah, he's been an absolute blast to watch, whether it be the game tying home run last Tuesday against the Orioles that they promptly shit away, double that Connor Wong then cashes in on Friday night to win 1-0. Like, he's been a blast.
He just seems like, I don't know about the long-term answer at first base, but he seemed like the first baseman the Red Sox have needed all season. Like, Abraham Toro, shout out, but goodbye. Like, I salute you.
He stuck around
for your service. Yeah, he's in Worcester now, right?
Yeah, which, like, it's good to have depth like that down there, but especially because they've been kind of pushing Romy to play against righties more than they were probably comfortable with because Toro had been so bad down the stretch. So it's nice to have like a platoon. And honestly, like, we can get into the Rafaela conversation. We're on national TV tonight. He said that he was more comfortable playing center field. And also, he's just been one of the worst bats in baseball since the All-Star break. Like, I'm okay pushing a Hamilton Romy platoon at second base and then just playing Nate Lowe every day against lefties. Like, his splits aren't that bad. I'll pull them back up, but they are not that bad career wise against lefties. Like, and even since he's come to the Red Sox, he's already he produced -0.4 WAR with the Nationals, or B-WAR, excuse me, with the Nationals, and he's already up to 0.3 B-WAR with the Red Sox, hitting .357 with an .1159 OPS.
Yeah, that'll play. Like, he's been really everything you could have hoped for. Like, it was a signing that I think when the Nationals released him, I was really hoping they got it done. I didn't expect them to, but here we are, and he's been everything you've needed him to be thus far.
Yeah, and I quickly have the numbers here against left-handed pitching in his career. It's a .261 batting average with a .735 OPS, which is only 53 points lower on the OPS than it is against righties. So I'm perfectly fine pushing a Romy Hamilton platoon, which, credit to David Hamilton, he played really good defense in the series, granted, in that was it Friday night's game where he had one, maybe two of the worst base running blunders I've ever seen. Yeah. Him getting called up and then promptly picked off third base because he fell asleep was hilarious. But
maybe that was Thursday.
Could have been Thursday. Know. Yeah. One of the two games. But when they threw over at first base and he slid awkward, like, he didn't slide, he just kind of fell forward. If he was out on that play where he just like bang hit the ground and then had to like grab for the bag aimlessly, that would have been the funniest play of the year. That would have beat Nate Eaton's brain getting broken on a routine ground ball to third.
Oh yeah. Oh man. And Nate Eaton, by the way, is back in the major leagues and has done nothing but make me very upset since he's been back here. And I don't understand why. I think one of these games versus the Yankees, he was leading off, and then tonight he was batting fifth, and they ended up pinch hitting Nathaniel Lowe for him. But it's like, dude, what have you done? I understand you have good numbers against lefties, but I don't care if you're Nate Eaton.
And it's one of those things too where it's like, okay, we don't trust him to be on the major league roster all the time. Like, he's not consistently one of our best 26 guys, but when he is here, he's leading off.
Right. Like, it makes no sense. It makes no sense.
And like, not to mention that, like, but like also on Thursday or whenever, I think maybe it was Tuesday, He's leading off and or what? No, man, geez, what day was it that he was leading off and in center that they made the lineup changes where Roman went to DH? Was it the first game in New York?
It might have been the second game in New York, because I think it was the same game as the password played for the first time.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so like they'll do anything to get Sadon Rafaela to stick at second base, and it just doesn't make any sense. And I kind of push back against the theory that it's only playing second base that's making Sadon bad at the plate, because I think I jumped the gun on my Sadon Rafaela apology, because obviously he's been really good in the month of July, but here are the numbers on Sadon since the All-Star break. 32 games, 16.8% strikeout percentage, which is fine. 4.8% walk percentage, again, fine. But where it gets really ugly is a 190 batting average with a 490 OPS, good for a 31 WRC plus, which is tied for second worst in baseball in that stretch.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has been bad.
And I do, like, I'm willing to acknowledge that part of it is playing second base, where you have to focus on playing a position that you're not used to, this, that, and the other thing. But part of it, too, I think, is just the peaks and valleys of Sadon Rafaela as a player. Like, I just think that we're going to see him get scorching hot and be one of the best hitters in baseball, where people think that Pap wasn't a moron for saying that he's going to be a MVP candidate. And then we're going to see this, where he's been, like I said, the second worst player by WRC plus in over a month span.
Yeah, but you can live with that with his defense. Like, even tonight,
if he's in center field, right. I just think it becomes a lot more palatable in center field.
Totally agree. And this all goes back to the problem we've been talking about all season, the outfield logjam, where now that you and Marcelo Meyer had season-ending surgery. I don't even know if we talked about that, but that's the reason that he's playing second base this often. Like, if Meyer was still here, you would have him pretty much exclusively for his defense at second base, and then all your problems would pretty much be solved. And that would be a great platoon, I think, Meyer and Romy at second. But it's just been super tough to not only sacrifice your great defense in center field, but also to see his numbers dip at the plate so much. Like,
yeah, it's a 130 batting average with a 312 OPS at second base.
It's been horrible. Not only that, now he's publicly campaigning that he doesn't want to play second base. So
please, Alex, I'm sick. Do us all a tired. Favor. Yeah. I just don't understand. Like, to stick Nate Eaton there, like, we can't move around the infield so that Nate Eaton doesn't have to play center field. And, like, he was fine out there, but we have the best defensive center fielder in baseball. Like, what is the point of having the best defensive center fielder in baseball being like, oh, he's a second baseman? And like, in course, like, he should still win the gold glove out there. Well, if he's so good out there, then why isn't he playing? Like, play him out there. I don't understand. It should not be that difficult.
Yeah, and we've had pretty much a different outfield every night at this point, it feels like. And I don't really mind it as much if you're switching, like, Duran, say, from left to center, or Roman from left to right. Like, to me, that doesn't matter as much. But moving someone from the infield to the outfield pretty consistently, like, sometimes they'll move him to center in the same game. Dude, what are we doing?
When you are putting, like it's almost like he's trolling us, like going out of his way, him being Cora, obviously, but it's almost like Cora's going out of his way to keep Sadon at second base. Like I said, like Nate, we're shuffling the outfield around before that game against the Yankees, and it's like, oh, okay, like, Roman has to DH now, so we're gonna put Nate Eaton out in center field. Like, you gotta be shitting me, dude. Nate Eaton in center field? Like, you have the best defensive center fielder in baseball, and we're gonna put Nate Eaton out there?
Yeah, dude, I don't know what Nate Eaton brings to the table, because you told me it was speed, and then you didn't test Colton Cowser's arm when the game was on the line. Yeah. So I don't care.
Yeah, which we did. I mean, I guess we didn't even pod since then either, but, like, yeah, it's baffling. Like, there's so, for whatever reason, these bottom of the roster players that like don't belong in the big leagues, and this team just clings to them for whatever reason it may be. He's kind of come back down to earth too recently. Yeah. It's just like, I don't know, like this team, and I've been fucking digging around trying to find the right qualified number of attempts to get Seidan Rafaela's outs above average at second base to populate. And I finally did it. It's a -1. Like, it's just, I don't understand. Like, we're clinging to the Nate Eatons of the world, the David Hamiltons of the world, Isaiah Campbell. Like, Isaiah Campbell is the first pitcher to lose you a baseball game in which he didn't pitch in last week against the Marlins. Like, that loss firmly should have gone on to Isaiah Campbell's shoulders. Like this is a guy that is not a major league caliber pitcher. If you can't come in with a 5-run lead and get 3 outs, then you're not a major league caliber pitcher. And this is one of those things where he would have been, you could have sent him to fucking Egypt on Sunday and brought back up Brennan Bernardino because his clock was ready, but they didn't. They hung on to Isaiah Campbell for another day for some reason. I know he didn't pitch, but I would have felt much better if on Sunday I woke up to a notification that Fitz was coming up and Isaiah Campbell was being sent to Jupiter, because again, like, he cost you a game by not being able to get 3 outs with a 5-run lead. You go into that game on Sunday, Chapman comes in, does what Chapman's been doing all season, you sweep the Marlins, you don't have that terrible taste in your mouth from one of the worst losses of the year heading into that Orioles series, and then maybe you don't play like assholes for 2 straight days against the Orioles. Like, it, like, with runners in scoring position at one point, they were like 2-for-35 at a certain point into that first game at Yankee Stadium. Like, it was embarrassing. Like, it honestly was. Like, it was hard. And part of it is Rafaela struggles. Part of it is Duran has been pretty useless in the month of August after being really good in July. Like, they're just not getting enough out of key guys right now.
And the issue is inconsistency. And this isn't the first time that the bullpen has forced a role to Chapman into a game that he should have had no business being in.
All exactly. Year. Yeah.
And it's not from just one guy. Like, it's Jordan Hicks. It was Jorge Alcala for a little bit.
Weissert's done it.
Mm-hmm. So it's like your low leverage guys should be the least of your problems, I would say. Like, one of the bottom tier problems on a baseball team. Well,
even so, like, some of the high leverage guys have started to falter. I mean, Whitlock has been nails for a while now, but like, Weissert has fallen off. Like,
yeah.
Jordan Hicks, like I said it before, but Craig Breslow called Jordan Hicks an elite high leverage reliever when they first traded for him, and they made it known that this was a guy that they wanted. Craig Breslow was right in one of the three descriptors he used for Jordan Hicks. He is a reliever. He is not elite or high leverage by any stretch of the imagination. So, like, it's just, it's a failure on the front office. Like, ultimately, when this season comes to an end, we'll look back and say the front office didn't do enough to give this team a chance to win a World Series.
Totally agree. And it sucks because the American League is pretty wide open. And we've been saying that all season as well. And it just doesn't feel good. Like, even if they do make the playoffs, and I'm pretty confident that they will, I have no, what's the word?
Faith.
No faith. Exactly. I don't know. It's late.
I honestly just guess. And also, holy shit, Garrett Whitlock. 1.78 ERA about, in his since June 1st. 1.78 ERA in his last 30 1/3. He's been really good.
Yeah, I love me some Garrett Whitlock, and this may be as good a time as any to bring this up, because this is a movement we're trying to start on the Entering Ken Moore podcast.
Oh, and that yes.
For the love of God. The Red Sox team store needs to bring back the wall of jerseys. It was the greatest thing. It's that TikTok meme where like people are standing in front of a Chili sign and they're like, this is the Mecca. When I used to go to Fenway Park and see that thing, just every single player on the team's shirt jersey you could buy for like $30. And it was the best because I had a Mike Napoli shirt jersey for some ungodly reason. I had a Yoenis Cespedes shirt jersey for no reason. He was here for like half a season and I loved him and it was awesome.
If there was a prospect that got called up, I would have a jersey of them, and because I would make my dad go to all the games for the prospect debut. So I have an Andrew Benintendi number 40 jersey. I got a Xander Bogaerts 72. I got a Will Middlebrook 64. Like, if there's a jersey of a prospect with a weird number, I've got the jersey of it. Like, and now, like, it's like a memorabilia section a little bit, and like a wall of hats. Like, the hats are cool, but like, this memorabilia is so jacked up price wise that no one can afford it anyway. It's like, we need to be able to go into Fenway Park and buy a Nate Lowe jersey.
I need it. Like, yeah. I even looked online and I couldn't find one like that. I'm a very
hashtag bring back the jersey wall. That is a campaign. Please. Make the team store great again. We're going to bring back the jersey wall. That much I can promise.
The problem with the team store is everything is absurdly priced and the selection is so bad now. Like,
it's
and
just
I think
thinned it's out. Yeah, it's thinned out unbelievably.
I think it's because Nike took over the production. Like,
Fanatics. Fanatics ruins everything.
They do. Like, because I don't think those jerseys were branded on that wall. Like, they had someone pumping out those shirts like overnight.
Like, there was no tomorrow. Yeah.
Like,
build the jersey wall, make FSG pay. Build the wall, make them pay. That's what we're and I'm wearing a red hat right now. That's where
we need
we're
it
at.
Back.
Yeah.
I miss the times when I could walk into the Red Sox team store and buy a Nathaniel Lowe jersey for no reason. But yeah, it's just we're so far past
we're
that
hemorrhaging
point.
Money. We're hemorrhaging money, FSG. By
do you know
not,
how many
not
do you know how many
low
jerseys would be flying off the shelves right now?
But like, it takes so like it's gonna take so much business away from like DHgate and stuff now. Mm-hmm. Like too, if they do that, because I can spend $30 on a Nate Lowe jersey at the team store, or now I can't find a jersey. I guess I have to go take my business to mainland China and the fine folks at DHgate to get a $30 knockoff jersey. Like, you're taking money out of your own pockets and putting it into the hands of DHgate by doing this. Like, also quick note while we're talking jerseys and jerseys, because they ruined Players Weekend, obviously. Oh, like, did. None of the guys actually used the bats. Like, but they had these brace yourselves here for this word. They had these funky numbers on the side. And there are kids listening, I know. Apologies. But I just quickly wanted to bring up my weirdest jersey. I have a Robbie Ross Jr. Players Weekend jersey with the lawnmower on the back.
Oh, that's electric.
Yeah, if it wasn't going to be a pain in the ass for me to go grab, I'd bring it out. But yeah, shout out Robbie Ross Jr., the lawnmower.
Dude, somewhere in my closet at home, there is an Eric Thames Mr. T Player Weekend jersey.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like, it was electric. And
yeah, I've got a Travis Shaw, mayor of DDC, as well. Oh, I got that one signed when he was here. So that one's somewhere in my closet as well. But yeah, make the jersey wall great again and make Players Weekend great again.
It's not that hard. Like, you're just missing out on money here. You know how many of those Players Weekend nickname jerseys would fly off the shelves, especially if you made jerseys of them? We could just combine this whole thing. That would be sick.
And have guys use good nicknames. Like, a password jersey would go crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't like Bogaerts just use like X on the back of his jersey, or like Mookie put Mookie because technically his name's Marcus. Like, come on, like, let's get a little creative. Let's put the lawnmower. You got a cool nickname like the lawnmower. Let's put that one on there. Like, Roman Anthony can put "I love you" on the back, or "I love him." We love him.
That might look a little weird, but dude, you remember David Price? His nickname was Astro's dad because his dog was named Astro.
Yeah,
and people thought that was a dig at the Houston Astros for some weird reason.
People that didn't follow David Price at all.
Mm-hmm.
Shane Bieber wearing "not Justin,"
mm-hmm,
prompting Justin to get a "not Shane" jersey.
I want to say it was Blake Treinen wore a player to be named later. like the abbreviation.
Oh,
that.
That
was a pretty cool one too. So they're just like, why are we taking creativity out of the players' hands? And I get the bats were kind of cool, but you could do both. Like on a TV broadcast, I can't see that Jaron Duran swinging a stitch bat up there.
And a bunch of the guys after like one at bat didn't get a hit in their first at bat and then just switch back to their regular bats. So like it was cool for the one at bat. It was cool for the photo op, but like that's when players' weekend begun and ended, when they took the pictures with the bats.
Yeah. Oh, and we were absolutely robbed of the best bat of players' weekend, Marcelo Meyer's Lightning McQueen bat.
Oh yeah, yeah. That one was sick. Like, I forget who I. Someone said that Marcelo should change his number to 95. Roger McQueen of the Anaheim Ducks, their first round pick this year. Obviously, his last name is McQueen. He is wearing number 95, which is.
Oh, and he met Lightning McQueen.
Yeah.
Like the day after.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, that's so which, awesome. Like,
shout out to him. He has the ultimate feel for the moment. Your last name is McQueen. You're 95.
Mm-hmm. And you were drafted by the Ducks, right? Aren't they like owned by Disney or something? Or they used to be?
I think they were at one point. I don't know if they still are.
Yeah, talking Ducks.
Yeah, obviously. That's the off-season content. We're an Anaheim Ducks pod. Ducks fly together.
Dude, I would be down. Like they have cool jerseys. They just traded Trevor Zegras and what's his name? Gibson has wanted out of the Ducks for years now. Did they trade him too?
Yeah, I think he's a Red Wing now. Red actually. Wing,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they got rid of a BU scumbag in Trevor Zegras and acquired a great Boston College gentleman in Chris Kreider.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Stay hot, Anaheim Ducks. That was and that was just a preview of Ducks Fly Together coming to you this offseason.
I'm going to have to design a logo for that. I'm all over it. I don't even really watch hockey, but just for a Ducks podcast, I would.
Yeah, well, we got to open every single podcast with the Mighty Ducks. Quack, 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 quack.
This is falling completely off the rails. I don't even remember what. Oh, Jersey Wall, Yankees suck. I love Players Nathaniel Weekend. Lowe. Players Weekend.
Lightning McQueen. Roger McQueen. Yes. Ducks Fly Together.
And bring back the Jersey Wall, please. Like,
yeah.
We got to start this movement. Like, I think if this got enough traction, we would force their hands.
I just don't know why they wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Like, you got rid of the entire wall to basically just have people walk directly past that side of the store entirely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, everyone walks in and walks immediately over to the jerseys.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, the jersey section is tiny compared to what it used to be. Yeah,
it sucks now. And, like, you can only get a select number of jerseys. And I think I've had this rant before, but I hate that they sell, David Ortiz City Connect jerseys. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't need – I'm good. I don't need David Ortiz City Connect jerseys.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and this leads into a rant because they sell way too many Masataka Yoshida jerseys in there. And I am so sick of seeing Masataka Yoshida on my baseball team. I can't do it.
It is so much more maddening too, because like the lineup and roster just doesn't make sense with any time with him in it. Mm-hmm. So like it's like if you have this outfield logjam and you insist that Masataka Yoshida can still play the outfield and you put him out there and he looks okay, but he looks like he doesn't really belong. And he also just isn't hitting the ball at all. So you can't really stick him at designated hitter. But ideally, your best lineup has Jaron Duran in it, even though he's been awful in the month of August. Like, so it's so much easier if you can cycle through that DH spot with outfielders. But instead, you traded Rafael Devers to get Masataka Yoshida back in the lineup for whatever reason. He's just hitting, like you said, he just hits a ground ball to second base every time he's up.
Every single time. They even pinch hit him in one of these Yankees games and he hit a ball directly into the ground. Like, it's just, come on, man. Like, you're a DH in Major League Baseball. You have to be able to hit for power. That's the whole perk of having a DH. You put your best hitter there. And we have Masataka Yoshida. It's like, I just don't understand what he's done to deserve at bats.
And I understand, like, they didn't trade Rafael Devers to get Masataki Yoshida in the lineup. But you know, when they were fucking rattling off the, like, pros and cons of trading Rafael Devers, they were like, well, this gives us a way to get Yoshida back in the lineup. And that is just such incredibly flawed thinking. Like essentially, they just said, well, we're paying Yoshida a lot of money, and we should probably find a way to get him in. So if we just trade Rafael Devers, that's an avenue to doing that. Like, and again, I understand that that wasn't the leading factor in getting Rafael Devers off this baseball team, but it was something that they thought about. And that is, even if they thought about it for half a second, that is too much thinking about Masataki Yoshida when you're talking about trading your best fucking player.
Yeah, and I mean, the evidence is clear. Like, the second they traded Devers, he was miraculously recovered.
Yeah. Yeah, they sent him the healing baths of, is it Lourdes in France where the healing baths are? They sent him there and then traded Rafael Devers, and he was miraculously, Lourdes in France, nailed that one, boom. They sent him there, they traded Devers, he's miraculously healed, and now he has a 78 OPS plus on this baseball team.
Please just staple him to the bench for the rest of the season. I don't care if he complains at this point. Like, he's not helping.
He's not on the team this offseason, so, like, it doesn't really matter at this point. And, like, at this point, you've already treated him like such shit that I think he's already going to sewer the organization when talking about them to other Japanese players. And, like, let's be honest, like, right now, why would any Japanese player coming over to America sign anywhere but the Dodgers?
Right. So it's not that big of a deal.
Right. Like, I can't see it anymore. And like I said, Jaron Duran has not been good in the month of August, but I have faith in him to turn it around much more than I have faith in Masataki Yoshida to do so.
At least when Duran isn't swinging it, he still can, like, leg out ground balls. Like, Masataki Yoshida has no redeeming qualities.
No, none. And, like, he has aura. That's his redeeming quality, is aura.
He has ground balls with aura. I can't do it. Your time has come, man. Like, you're a super nice guy. People seem to like you in the clubhouse, but I don't like watching you on my television. I can't do it anymore.
But it goes back to the point I made earlier about they're, for whatever reason, they're just clinging on to bottom of the roster players. And it's just when it clearly isn't working. And that's where we're at with Masataki Yoshida. It's clearly not working. He's clearly not a fit for the roster. And at a certain point, it's just clogging you up too much to continue to trot him out there to ground out to second base.
Mm-hmm. Because you saw the power at least a little bit in years past. This year, he's given you nothing. Like, basically has one home run because one came off a position player. And the other, I think you were already up pretty big. Like, it wasn't any game-altering homers for him. So it's just, I don't know. I feel like also the flow of the game always seems to find him up in big spots.
Yeah,
and
huge.
He never comes through.
Well, it's because they continue to hit him in the heart of the lineup.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which, like, that is kind of where the problem lies in so many different facets here. Like, it guys that aren't swinging it well continue to find themselves up in big spots, like Jaron Duran or Sidon Rafaela or Masataki Yoshida. Like, Duran is obviously going to continue to find himself in big spots when he's hitting in the three hole behind Roman Anthony and Alex Bregman, and he just hasn't been able to come through. Like, so far in the month of August, it's a .221 batting average with a .688 OPS. Mm-hmm. Like, and honestly, like, the demeanor at the plate, like, I saw a bunch of people, like, they kind of erupted, said anything around Jaron Duran. There is no, like, logical conversation around Jaron Duran anymore with Red Sox fans. It's either he's the greatest player since Ted Williams to come to the franchise and, like, the greatest guy alive, or people want him dead. Like, I'm not going to act like he committed the crime of the century calling a fan a fucking pussy, because I don't think it was by any stretch. And if you're a heckling fan, like, I think it's, players are well within their rights to call you a fucking pussy. If, like, obviously he crossed the line last year, but I don't have any problem with that. But, like, it's one of those things where, like, he just kind of has to, like realize that people are going to, like, freak out when something like that happens. Like, it's just a consistent pattern of him losing his cool and lashing out. Like, and it's not just the situation last year where he used a slur. I mean, this is dating back years where he was fighting fans on like a Wednesday afternoon in Kansas City. Like, I promise you, the Royals fans on Wednesday afternoons are not that rowdy that you need to fight them. And I'll give him a pass for the one in Cleveland, because like, for everyone to immediately be like, it was this fucking guy that did it. Like, he obviously said something pretty heinous. Pretty bad. Like, it's just, it's one of those things where he like, it mounts it, like at a certain point, it has to be like, all right, this isn't a guy that's built for this market. Like, and I think we're at that point.
Yeah. And it felt like they were getting ready to move him during the trade deadline, but.
And he just got hot.
Yeah. And I know Bradfo also said that would have affected the clubhouse a lot. So I wonder if it's more of an off-season move where it's like, okay, this may bother the clubhouse, but they'll get over it by the time they get to Fort Myers.
Like, right. And I think it, like, part of it is a lot of the teams that are looking for a Jaren Duran type player didn't have players that match up well with you. Like, we talked about it a lot during the deadline, but you needed pitching and you needed controllable pitching. So if you're trading Jaren Duran, the only teams interested in him at the deadline are playoff teams.
Right.
And those teams aren't looking to get rid of their pitching surplus right now. Cause it's just what, I mean, we're seeing it right now, how valuable having pitching surplus was. Like, how good would Quinn Priester look right now?
Oh, he'd look pretty great.
Like, yeah. Like, it just wasn't going to match up well at the deadline to trade him. But like, they have a bunch of decisions to make, because the Sox prospect guys keep talking about Christian Campbell at first base as something they don't see as a long-term fit. And they think he's ultimately going to be a left fielder. I'm not discrediting the fact that Justinson Garcia might actually be better than Jaren Duran or Willier Abreu too. Like, I really like Willier, but at a certain point he's incredibly streaky. So like, can you, and by, from what I understand, Garcia is a really good defender out there too. Like, I don't know that he's a gold glove caliber defender, but could you see maybe all three of these guys shipped out in the offseason? Like, at this point, I wouldn't even, like, if you could sell me on a Christian Campbell, Roman Anthony, Justinson Garcia outfield going into next season, and you just fucking wipe clean of Abreu, Rafaela, and Duran. Like, I'm in on that. If, depending on what the returns are, like, I'm open to any and all options to figuring out this outfield logjam.
It's going to be a very interesting offseason for a number of reasons. And I think those are all great points. But another one is, if Nathaniel Lowe continues this tear that he's on, and obviously I don't expect this level of production to continue, but Tristan Casas is a big question mark. Would you just pay him to come for potentially another couple of years?
I mean, the issue is that then you get into, like, I don't think they're going to tender him a contract and, like, right, go to arbitration and stuff with him, because he made 11 mil or thereabouts on the first arbitration with the Nationals last year. So you'd have to top that. So then we're talking like 15, 16, 17 mil. I just don't see them doing that for a year of Nathaniel Lowe. So do you non-tender him and then try to work something out? Sure, that's a possibility. But then is a team going to overpay and beat you price-wise on something? Like, I don't know. And also, you mentioned Casas. Like, I think they're still going to give Casas a chance to win back that first base job. We'll see where he's at health-wise. So then you have two lefty first basemen. It just seems like the natural platoon would be a righty for Casas. It'll be interesting to see how they do things, though, because if Lowe continues at this production pace, I don't hate just going to arbitration with him and giving him the 14, 15 mil for 1 year and telling Casas, look, man, you had 2 years to prove that you could, one, prove that you could stay healthy, and two, prove that you can produce at a major league level to the same rate that you were in 2023. And he just hasn't been able to do that. So like, until he can do that, like, I'm not writing him in Sharpie by any means. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, though.
Yeah. I know we're jumping ahead a lot in terms of the offseason talk, but honestly, like, I'm just not confident that this team makes a playoff run, so I'm already kind of planning for the offseason at this point.
Yeah, and I think, like, talking point-wise, like, that gives us so much more to talk about, because, I mean, we can, like I said, it's not going to change the current roster right now. The deadline is passed. Like, there isn't going to be impact arms that are just going to be waived the same way that Nathaniel Lowe was waived. Like, you are you interested in Austin Gomber? I sure as fuck am not.
Nope.
Like, so, like, those are the guys getting waived right now. Like, it's the reinforcements on the rotation are not coming. Like, no. This is what you have. So, like, sure, could they pitch well enough to get hot and go on a run? Yeah, anything can happen. But am I confident that they're going to do that? No, especially not when you're considering that game four could end up being a fucking bullpen game or Dustin May starting, which, like, at that point might as well be a bullpen game because you're going to be so much more aggressive with Crochet looming and Dustin May starting in a playoff game.
That's the other thing that makes me mad about them not really addressing Buehler's spot in the rotation as of right now, because wouldn't you want to give Toley or Harrison a longer look up here?
Well, that's the same can be said about the lineup and the defensive alignment. Like, I want to get to the playoff alignment and lineup as quickly as possible so we can see what it looks like. Like, you're telling me that in a playoff game, you're having the best defensive center fielder in baseball play second base. I just don't believe that. That defense is way too valuable out there in games that could dictate your entire season. Like, I don't believe that Seidon Rafael is going to be at second base in the playoffs. So the sooner we can get him back out in the outfield where he's more comfortable, and it's obviously already taken a toll on him because we saw him on, was it Saturday or Friday? Thursday, one of the Yankees game. I don't know why they're all blending together right now, but whatever game he took the Ben Rice triple, he took a terrible path to that ball.
Yeah. I don't remember which game that was, but it's been bad. Like you said, it's a minus one outs above average at second base.
I think it was Thursday. He took the terrible route to the ball in center. It definitely was, because I remember mentioning it on air with Mego and Lions on Friday.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, it's affecting him at the plate, and it's affecting him at both defensive positions.
And I don't know. It's just you can't keep messing with your lineup every single day. I feel like it's a new lineup pretty much every game. And I understand you have lefty and righty centered lineups, but it just seems like we just have no consistency whatsoever right now. And
because they don't.
And I just think that's still a pretty unserious organization. That's what it comes down to, is like, I just have seen nothing that really solidifies my hopes in a World Series run.
No, I don't think so either. It's one of those things where I said it, like, sure, they could get hot at a certain point, but, like, I don't have a high faith. You said it earlier, the faith level in them to do that is just not very high.
And I hate to be so pessimistic on an episode where they just took 3 out of 4 from the Yankees on the road, but it's just like the problems we've been seeing all season have still been there throughout this kind of ebbing and flowing all season. Like, even still, before they took 3 out of 4 from the Yankees, they were having embarrassing losses to two of the mediocre teams in the entire league. So,
and not to mention, every time the Blue Jays win or lose, you lose too. Like, it's like on one hand, it's fine because you're not losing ground on them, but you're also not gaining ground. They dropped 2 out of 3 to the Pittsburgh Pirates a week ago, and you didn't capitalize on either of them because you got swept in a 2-game set by the Baltimore Orioles. Like, it's just frustrating. Like, they lost today to the Miami Marlins, the Blue Jays lost, and you can't get a sweep because you have Dustin May going. Like, it's just so annoying that every time you win, they win. It's just, you cannot gain any ground on the Blue Jays, who I just don't, like, they don't scare me either. Like, nobody in the AL scares me, which makes the deadline all the more frustrating.
And I know we've been circling back to that a lot, but I think that really tells the story of the entire season. Like,
they continually fail the team. Craig Breslow, and I'm going to harp on this scene in the clubhouse until I'm blue in the face, where he says, I've been a Major League Baseball player longer than I've been a front office executive, and that'll be true for 10 years. I still think like a player. And that was part of the reason they brought him in. We heard that so many times when he was hired, that he knows what a clubhouse wants at the deadline. He knows what a boost it can be to go out and add a guy at the deadline for that playoff push because he was in the clubhouse. And we haven't seen it 2 years in a row now. He's failed them at the deadline. Like, at a certain point, he's inexperienced isn't an excuse. Like, at a certain point, he needs to come out and deliver because it's been back-to-back deadline duds. And this year, like we've been saying, I think they're still going to make the playoffs, but it could have been a much deeper run than it's going to eventually be unless they do get hot. Like, and you can point to the deadline in both years in like, okay, if they just went out and they added X, Y, and Z, like, it didn't even have to be Joe Ryan. It could have been Merrill Kelly. It could have been any number of guys that just solidify your rotation and make you feel better about it. But no, they got Dustin May, who's just another reclamation project that the Dodgers were willing to throw onto the scrap heap, and you overpaid for it.
Yeah, that's a good point too, because James Tibbs has been swinging it in the Dodgers system.
Yeah, and James Tibbs isn't anybody that I'm like wildly like obsessed with as a prospect, but I wouldn't have traded him for Dustin May.
No, totally agree. I think on a more happy note, we can come through on our tease that we now gave, what was it, like a week and a half ago now?
Yes, yeah.
But we talked about how the Milwaukee Brewers did an alumni home run derby, and we thought it would be cool to make a list of 10 people we would want to see in a Red Sox alumni home run derby. So how do you want to do this? Should I just rattle them off, or should we?
Yeah, well, I think we have two of the same guys for sure.
Probably, yeah.
Manny and Ortiz.
Of course.
So, yeah, those ones are the two obvious ones, and you know, just alternate from here. How many? I did five.
Oh, you did five? I got 10 here. I can skip.
Oh, jeez. Boy.
No, don't worry about it.
Jeez, showing me up. Unbelievable. 10.
I didn't mean to.
No, I want to hear all 10, but okay. I do only have five, including those two.
Okay, so we'll alternate until you're out.
All righty. You want to kick us off with your first one?
Okay, Mo Vaughn. He might be too old for this. But
ooh, I don't think I kind of consider those guys to be too old for it.
He might be.
He might be, but I do like that one. I have Adrian Gonzalez.
Oh, I didn't have him. My next one is JD Martinez.
Yep, I had him as well. Yeah. Yeah, that feels like another pretty easy and obvious one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just he's not doing too much. He seems like he's gonna or was waiting around for the perfect opportunity. Every time I'm on TikTok, I see JD Martinez on a boat, just like living his best life. Like, we know that John Heyman reported that the Rangers offered him a non-guaranteed deal. It's like, yeah, dude, I made 100 and whatever million. I have a World Series ring. I was a very productive Major League Baseball player. And you're offering me a minor league non-guaranteed deal. I'm going to keep chilling on my boat in Miami, and yeah. Best of luck with the rest of the season, you guys. Like, yeah, I don't blame him at all for turning that shit down.
An absolute Hall of very good player. If I've ever seen one, one of my all time favorites, actually the only jersey I can wear to Fenway now, cause my Whitlock jersey got autographed. So I just have a JD Martinez World Series jersey.
I like it,
but I love him. I would love to see him back here.
Yep. How do you want to do it? Since we both had JD, do you want to go again?
Okay, sure. I have Mike Napoli.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And I don't know what he's doing.
He's the first base coach for the Reds. Is it
the Cubs? Oh, he was. Right,
he was with the Cubs. Now he's with the Reds.
Okay. Yeah.
Willie Mopena was another one for me.
Yeah, I don't have him, but that would be electric.
Yeah, I kind of speaking of Willie Mopena, I'll give you a two for one here. Franchy Cordero. Like, just give me guys. Quick aside, Franchy Cordero hit one of the longest balls or furthest balls I've ever seen hit in batting practice at Wrigley Field. He absolutely fucking shit on one to right field. And it cleared everything. I've never seen a ball hit that far. He just absolutely smoked it. Give me as many guys that stunk at baseball in real life, but hit moon bombs in batting practice for this. Willie Mopena and Franchy Cordero.
Love it. Was Cordero actually on your list, or you just thought of him?
No, I just thought of him when I said Willie Mo.
That would be crazy. I think he hit like a 513 foot homer in Philly? I think it was Philly.
Yes, I think it was. I can picture it in my head.
But, oh, man. He when he got a hold of one, which was basically never, but
yeah,
it went very far. It's my turn, right?
Yep.
Okay. You might have him as well. Will Middlebrooks.
No, I actually didn't have him. My last one was Johnny Gomes, because he's been doing that whatever baseball calls it, MLB Home Run Derby X. Yeah. With a bunch of former players.
Gonzalez was too.
And I think Manny did one too. Mm-hmm. So that's three names from that one. But yeah, Johnny Gomes just up there. Like, talk about a guy who's up there hacking. Like, his swing makes no sense. It's like it's so violent and compact, but it worked for him. Johnny Gomes, shout out.
All right, I like it. So I have how many more? Four. Kevin Youkilis. I feel like he might be too old too, but maybe not.
Yeah, but he's been the hitting coach for Team Israel in the WBC. Yeah. So I don't know, maybe if he's like still hitting or what, but yeah, that'd be an interesting one. I mean, I saw Jason Veritek taking hacks for the fantasy football draft, and he didn't look too hot up there. So maybe a bunch of these guys are too old for this.
Yeah, but you had Prince Fielder do it. So I'm like,
yeah,
I feel, and he had all the neck problems. I'm like, maybe some of these guys would just say, screw it.
Yeah. Veritek's got to be older than Prince Fielder, right?
Probably, because Prince Fielder retired when he was like 35.
Prince Fielder is 41. I would imagine Veritek is older than 41. Let's see. Yeah, Veritek is 53. Oh, yeah.
So he's
a bit older.
Youkilis is probably around there.
Yeah, maybe he's in his 40s or so.
I want to see how old Mo Vaughn is, too, because might be 57. And he's still ripped, dude. Like, I think he could do it.
I'm in.
Yeah. Okay. My next one is Mike Lowell, who also might be too old.
Yeah, that's a good. See, that's like some of these guys I just dismissed as too old.
Mm-hmm. It was more just like who I think could still hit me.
Oh my god! I just thought of one.
Mm-hmm.
You said Mike Lowell, guy who was traded for him, Hanley Ramirez. Bring back Hanley. We need. That's what we need.
Yeah, that he could still do it.
Hanley, Poppy, and Manny. All just fucking hitting nukes. I'm in.
And Franchi?
Yes. Oh, dude. And Franchi, Willie Moe, Hamley, Manny, and Poppy. That's the big five right there.
Dude, imagine they bring back the Jersey Wall just for this event.
Oh, my. I'd have them all.
I mean, what else do you need? Okay, my second to last guy was really not on the Red Sox for very long, but Adrian Beltre would be awesome.
Ooh. Yeah, I guess that's another one I didn't really even consider because not that he was too old, but it's such a fever dream that he was a Red Sox.
And he probably would have no business coming back here. Like, did he get a statue outside of the Rangers?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, he's like on recently. He's swinging the bat. Yeah, maybe it was recently as this weekend. I just saw that.
Yeah, and he just made the Hall of Fame last year.
But I've
always loved him.
Adrian Beltre, he's a guy that should have been here for so much longer.
I know, like, they kind of saved his career in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And he probably left.
Yeah,
is that the same offseason they got Gonzalez? Maybe.
I think it was.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess it makes sense, but I don't know about you. I would have traded Beltre for a Gonzalez at that point. Like,
yeah,
maybe part of it was he didn't want to come back. I don't really know. I admittedly did not follow the Red Sox nearly as much as I do now back then, because I was 10.
They got him in 20. They got Gonzalez in 2011. And I do want to say that Beltre was here for 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. Yeah. So it was that offseason. Gonzalez, if Beltre finished top 10 in MVP voting in 2010.
Yeah, and they said, we're good.
Yeah, all set. Hit 321 with a 919 OPS. They were like, we're all set.
That's a jersey I would want. Ooh, I wonder if I can find that.
I bet you could find one of those, because that was when there was still the Jersey Wall. There's definitely 29 Beltre jerseys out there.
Yeah, and finally, another guy who was around for the Jersey Wall, JBJ.
Ooh, yeah, that's a
Long Island.
He was really a home run guy, But no. I'd be interested to see him just kind of let it bark, just to see like what could, like I said, like I think I've talked about it before, like during batting practice out there, just watching, and they have the track man up, like seeing some of these guys like Romy Gonzalez hit one with a 118 exit velo, or Rob Refsnyder hit one 450 over the monster one day. Mm-hmm. Like it's some of these guys that you wouldn't assume have a bunch of pop, have some sneaky pop.
Yeah. And also just, I want to mention Keon Broxton was in that.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Brewers. He has 39 career major league home runs. So I don't think they really care.
No, we could be like, we could be bringing back Bobby Dalbec and like Michael Chavis for these events.
Yeah. Like Brock Holtz. Would he be interested? Probably.
I bet he would. Yeah. He would hit. Yeah, I mean, he would win it, but.
Oh, that would be sweet. But yeah, that was cool. I'm glad we came through on the tease there. We can preview the Orioles series quickly. The Orioles have a couple TBDs, but as of right now, it is Brennan Bernardino, Lucas Giolito, Brian Baio, and Garrett Crochet for the Red Sox.
Which is such a fucking crock of shit that Crochet Skeens isn't on Friday. Like we get, oh, okay, come to Fenway on Friday. You get to watch Paul Skeens, and you're like, let's fucking go. And you get to watch Dustin May, and you're like, ah,
Yeah, they might lose.
Yeah, right. They're going to be dogs. Skeens might get a win. They're going to be dogs in that game on Friday.
Probably.
Although the Fenway Greens, those are just automatic walk-offs. So bet Red Sox and extras.
Yeah, Paul Skeens is gonna go 8 shot.
Yeah, and they're gonna win. They're gonna win 2-1. Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, that's pretty much what Sandy did last time. So
true. That was a lot of fun. I kind of forgot about that. Who hit that walk off?
Story.
Right. It was like a grounder.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But he's been. Oh, also he has a 2020 season now officially, which is cool. Shout out.
My friend said this to me, if you told us in June that it was going to be a real conversation about Story opting out, we would have laughed in your faces.
Mm-hmm.
And now, sure enough, now it's a conversation.
Would you hate it? I don't think I would hate it at all.
It's tough because he's been so valuable to the team, but like also like, can he stay healthy? Like that remains to be seen. So I think I'd be 50-50. Like I'd be upset to see him go after finally staying healthy and finally delivering on that potential. But I also wouldn't be too mad to get the money off the books. But then again, like who are the free agents that the money's going to? We've done this a lot. Like they're not paying Kyle Tucker. So where is that money going to? Probably no one.
Right. It's just more for me, like putting Meyer at shortstop next year, but that's another.
I think they can still do that. They can just put him at second, Story at second being, if they really wanted to.
True. But I also think of Christian Campbell and like,
yeah.
Will he be a second baseman moving forward? I don't necessarily know, but you probably need to give him consistent playing time next year, no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think so. Again, like that's a guy that you need to see it from health wise, but like I'm willing to give him the benefit of that doubt because especially when he did that press conference after he, or not a press conference, but a scrum, when they announced that, he said that when he injured the wrist in 22, they told him he was probably going to eventually need surgery on it. And that after he did that the wrist should be good. So hopefully this is just, it with the wrist injury.
Yeah, I'm not super worried about it. I don't think his defense will take a hit regardless of that. So, and that's really what I value him for right now.
Yeah,
like I think the bat will come around, but as of right now, he's just been a very good defender.
Yeah.
So I look forward to him coming back and fully staying healthy, I hope. But we were previewing the Red Sox or the Orioles. A
couple TBDs. They've got Big Sue.
Brennan Bernardino.
Yeah.
Cade Povich is going. Like it's
gonna be, oh, dude. You have to rock Big Sue and Cade Povich. And like Cade Povich is a guy that we've made fun of in the past. Because it's like, like who the fuck is Cade Povich to be like shoving it up your ass? And it's like it at a certain point, it's not a joke. Like Cade Povich has been really good against you so far in his career and he sucks. So like you have to come through and you have to hit him. And same can be said for Sugano. Like as like if you're not seeing Trevor Rogers in this series, which I think you might on Thursday because he pitched yesterday.
Hmm. but I thought he went.
When did he pitch? He pitched today. He pitched today, so you're not going to see him.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I know he was before Big Sug.
Yeah, it was Dean Kramer. It was Dean Kramer yesterday because I saw a video of him yelling at Samuel Basayo.
Yeah, dude, fuck off. You're not good enough to be doing that.
Dean Kramer, and you're yelling at the top catching prospect in the sport, which I think Basayo is probably long-term a first baseman, but that's besides the point. Honestly, this, especially with the TBDs, like, depending on what they do there, like, you lay an egg against them at Fenway, like, you have to win this series.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you go back to Fenway against the Pirates, winning 2-4 gamers on the road, no less, I would be pretty confident.
They're kind of right back in the spot where they were coming off of that Astros Padres road trip, where it's like, all right, you have two bad teams in front of you now. Like, I think they're varying levels of bad. The Pirates are definitely worse, but, like, you need to capitalize. You have 7 games against 2 last place teams right now. You need to come out and win at least 5 of them.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So I'm going to take 3 out of 4 in this Orioles series.
I'm going with a sweep. For whatever reason, I don't know if this trend has persisted, but earlier in the season, pitchers facing a team for the second time in a week have gotten absolutely rocked the second time they've seen him. And I just don't think that Big Sug is the type of guy that can absolutely baffle a lineup as talented as the Red Sox twice in a week. So I think they're going to get to him finally. And then the TBDs, I mean, we'll see who they end up using there, but I can't imagine that the Orioles out of a playoff race are going to pull up anybody crazy to fill those roles. And my thoughts on Cade Povich, I've made pretty clear, like, he sucks, but for whatever reason, he dazzles against you every time out there. So, like, eventually you have to hit a guy like that. So yeah, I think they're going to sweep.
I agree. I don't agree. But I agree on the point of the logic of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The logical sound. So
I'm just going to, it's tough to sweep 4-game series. And right.
Cespedes Barbecue calls it a mop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got them mopping.
I think they're going to lose the game tomorrow or today when people are listening to this, but. Other than that, like, Giolito, Bayo, Crochet, you're 1-2-3 against a not great team. You should be pretty good.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
I think that's all we have. Did you have anything else that you wanted to touch on?
No, I don't think so.
So it's good to be back. I know we took a little bit longer of a break this time around, but I imagine we'll get back to more of the schedule we've been having all season. So. Yeah, thanks so much for listening, and we'll check in with you guys again next time.
Peace.